On 88.1 It's Maryland Morning, I'm Tom Hall. The author and essayist E.L. Doctorow passed away Tuesday at the age of 84 from complications related to lung cancer. In a career that spanned 50 years, he became one of the most important and widely read writers of the 20th century. He wrote two collections of short stories, a play, and numerous essays, but he is most remembered for his 10 novels, including Ragtime, Billy Bathgate, and The March. He won the National Book Critics Circle Award 3 times. President Clinton gave him the National Humanities Medal in 1998, and in 2013, the American Academy of Arts and Letters awarded him the Gold Medal for Fiction. In November 2006, Mr. Doctorow was in Baltimore to receive a Lifetime Literary Achievement Award from the Enoch Pratt Library. He had just published a book called Creationists, a fascinating collection of essays about writers and the art of writing. Here's a look back at our conversation about that book. I understand you are named after a writer who was very closely associated with Baltimore.
Oh, yes, Poe. He was one of my father's favorite writers. Actually, my father liked a lot of bad writers.
Yeah, in fact, you call Edgar Allan Poe in your collection of essays our greatest bad writer.
Yeah, he's our greatest bad writer, so there's a certain consolation in that. He's really very much a part of the national literary consciousness. It would be hard to think of 19th century American literature without Poe. He expressed things that nobody else did, sort of the dark, gothic version of secular humanism.
Now, why do you call him our greatest bad writer?
Well, he wrote for money, and he did a lot of hasty stuff, and there's a lot of very fustian prose in his work, and he makes a lot of mistakes.
Now, in your essay about Arthur Miller, for example, talk about how stories make the proposition that life is something of a moral or something of moral consequence. What do you mean by that?
Well, there's an underlying all literature is the ancient sacred texts that sort of established us as human beings and that we still live by to some extent or another.
And you're referring to the Bible, for example?
Yeah, the Bible in Genesis created stories that established the idea of the human being and living in a state of moral consequence in relation to God, of course. And either keeping the covenant or not keeping the covenant, either having a conscience or not having a conscience, following the ideals of civilized behavior or not. So all literature since then, although not presumably endorsed by God, ever since the Enlightenment, the stories had to make it on their own.
Interesting. So literature as it proceeds from Genesis.
Yeah. Well, not directly, but you see, the original writers attributed their inspiration to God. So if there are things in the Bible that are contradictory or don't make sense, it's not the writer's fault because that's God talking. It's our fault, our inadequacy as readers, you see. Ever since the Enlightenment, you see, the stories have not had that authority. Writers are mortal. They're not connected with God. And they don't attribute their inspiration, unless they're very religious people, to God.
Talk about Herman Melville and the essay that you wrote about him in this book. You reveal that you read Moby Dick 3.5 times. You say that the half time was when you were 10 years old. Why is this book so important to you?
Well, actually, I found that book in my grandfather's library. He had a bunch of sea novels, a set of sea novels. That was one of them. And as I say in the piece, I was doing okay with that book until I hit the cetology. And that stove me in.
What do you mean by the cetology?
Whales. That's the study of whales. You know, he's a lot of stuff about whales.
A lot of stuff about whales. And you talk about the problem he sets up for himself about, you know, spinning out a whole novel based on one encounter with a whale.
Yeah, that was his technical problem. Presumably the encounter of the whale serving as the climax to the book. His problem was how to pass the time until then. And a lesser writer, of course, would start closer to that moment, maybe with a few flashbacks. But Melville doesn't even start at sea. He starts in Manhattan. And maybe 100 pages go by before he's on the Pequod and setting off on the whaling expedition with Ahab. What I like to think is that he figured out how to pass the time in two ways. One, to have the usual narrative strategies. There'd be other ships they could meet. There'd be a lot of weather, storms. There might be a mutiny. All these traditional narrative devices, but that wasn't sufficient. So the other principle of composition I maintain in that book is for him to destroy time. And that's when we get all the essays about whales and whaling and every other thing in the world, history, philosophy, anthropology. So he destroys time, in effect. It comes out of the book.
The author E.L. Doctorow. This is Marilyn Morning with Sheila Cast on 88.1 WYPR. I'm Tom Hall. Do you reread books often? Do you ever reread your own books?
Read my own book. Sometimes a little bit. There's kind of danger reading your own work. You open to a page and it looks pretty good. You know, that's fine. Or it might not look so good, and that makes you unhappy. So it's better, really, to leave it alone instead of rewriting it over and over again in your own mind. Mm.
You include an essay about Harpo Marx in this collection, and it's a little surprising because the collection is largely about literature. So why did you include it?
Well, what holds the collection together is the idea of the person who's creative, the rampant creativity that we know by what we create. And not all creativity, of course, is literary, although most of the pieces in the book are about writers. They're all creationists, whether they're writers, scientists, dancers, or comic memes, as Harpo was. His art is expressed through his physical activity, through his gestures, through his costume, through the character he presents, the idea of this sort of manic mute whose pockets are filled with a lot of junk. All these devices, I maintain, came out of his childhood. He was a dropout in the second grade. His parents were kind of careless about education. He was very poor. He had only one ice skate to skate with. So I relate all of that to our own child's identification with that.
Because he really resonated to you as a kid.
To all of us. We liked him best of all the Marx Brothers.
And you call this book Creationists. Now, that's kind of a tongue-in-cheek title, I would imagine. Well, is there a political overtone to that title?
Well, I leave that up to you to decide.
You speak of the act of writing as being very hard, all-absorbing work. And you point out that some of the creators of the most profound literature in the canon have themselves led somewhat wretched personal lives. What do you think the connection is between sort of personal troubles and creativity? Or is there one?
Well, some writers have had very pacific, serene lives. Although, generally speaking, happiness is not necessarily a proper condition for writing good books.
You don't think, huh?
Well, Zola was a great writer toward the end of his life. He married a young woman and he was extremely happy, and that was the end of his literary production. But certainly there is a transference, a certain kind of liberation from the self when you write, that you're not the person you usually are, which is a good thing.
And you even talk about leaving a big part of yourself with the book.
Yeah, there's a sense of liberation, but when you do this for a long, long time, you sort of write yourself out into the books, and there's not much left to you, although people will think there is.
The author, playwright, and essayist E.L. Doctorow. He passed away Tuesday at the age of 84. That's it for us today on Maryland Morning. On Monday, we continue our Living Questions series on religion in the public sphere. We'll talk about what congregations are doing to be as inclusive as they can be at a time when fewer people are embracing organized religion. I hope you can join us for Living Questions Monday morning on Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.
Maryland Morning is an original production
of your public radio,
WYPR,
in Baltimore.
The show is produced by Johnny McCone
and Connor Graham.
We have production help from
Christy Forrest
and Scott Seiss.
Nathan Sterner directs and engineers.
Coffee for our guests provided by Zeke's Coffee in Lauraville. On the web at ZEKESCoffee.com.
I'm Tom Hall.
I'm Sheila Cast. On this day in Maryland history, 1967, what's called a riot broke out in Cambridge, Maryland, after black activist H.Rap Brown spoke there, calling for African Americans to use force to win their rights. Someone set fire to an elementary school in the black section of town. White volunteer firefighters, citing fears of being attacked, refused to put out the flames. 20 buildings burned. There was no looting. We're back on Monday. Hope you'll join us.